Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you flew recently, did the airports you went through have facial recognition technology?
I flew through DCA, the Reagan International Airport in Washington, and it was one of the first airports to get facial recognition with TSA.
That's Jeffrey Fowler, a technology columnist for The Washington Post.
I personally did not get my face scanned because I have TSA pre, and they have not put that technology into TSA pre yet.
Would you have done it?
No.
Tell me why.
I'm also a journalist, so I would have wanted to test to see what they would have said. But, you know, I would tell listeners as well, say no, if only because it might slow you down by a little bit today, but it also sends a message that the TSA should be noticing that people are not comfortable with this.
If you're traveling this holiday or this summer, you might notice facial recognition at TSA checkpoints, too.
At 25 airports in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, the TSA is expanding a controversial digital identification program that uses facial recognition.
Travelers may notice kiosks with small cameras checking photos on their IDs to verify their identities.
Often, as Jeffrey said, travelers are confused or uncomfortable when they first encounter this tech. And an airport is not exactly the most relaxed environment to try to figure out on the fly whether you want to opt in to facial recognition. So today on the show, we're going to break down how this tech ended up in U.S. airports, whether it works, and why Jeffrey is so skeptical. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
If you're traveling soon, you might be dreading the airport. Right now, just getting through a packed and grumpy crowd to security is an exhausting process.
They have to stand in a long line, stand in front of an agent, hand them an ID, show them their boarding pass, and that agent has the job of making sure that you are the same person who's on that ID, and then you're ushered on to TSA screening.
How does facial recognition figure into this system?
So increasingly, at airports across the U.S., the TSA is trying to augment and then probably at some point replace those human agents with a computer, with an artificial intelligence algorithm that will decide whether you really belong on that plane.
While face screening might feel new, the roots of this program go back to 9/11. After the attacks, Congress tasked the Department of Homeland Security with incorporating biometric techniques into the screening process.
And over the past couple of, I guess now decades, they experimented with a lot. They tried iris recognition. They've thought about fingerprints. And really around 2020, and particularly around the pandemic, The TSA really settled on their latest experiment with facial recognition and started rolling that out at more and more places. And, you know, the thing that really made that possible, I think, is we're now going on almost a decade of having iPhones and other kinds of phones that unlock with our faces. And Americans have gotten very accustomed to that idea, to the idea that you could just look at a phone and it's a very normal thing and it'll unlock for you and that's safe and that's secure. So the TSA said, well, people are comfortable with this. Let's roll out our version of it.
You know, I flew to Italy not so long ago and I was surprised. I walked to my gate and when I was about to board my flight, Delta scanned my face and it sort of made me think like, oh, wait, how much is the government working in concert with the airlines? Where did this start? Kind of how are they coordinating?
Yeah, the experience you had was an earlier, slightly earlier version of this. So back in 2019, and it had started even before then, I wrote a column for the Post about these partnerships between airlines and both TSA, but then also the Department of Homeland Security and immigration to essentially try to turn our faces into our tickets. So instead of having to present a ticket, you just present your face and you walk on through. And this is using some of the same kind of facial recognition technology, but it was really sold to consumers and still is as a convenience, right? Hey, you don't want to wait in a long line. You don't want to have to like have a human, you know, check your stuff or carry around and get out your passport. So just give us permission and we'll check your face. So it sounds like maybe you were part of one of those programs.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you opt into it in advance?
No, I just walked right on up and that's what happened. Now that may be because I'm a frequent flyer with them. I don't know.
Well, so what your experience says is exactly what the fears of a lot of folks who are cautious about this technology and privacy advocates have been warning about, which is stuff that starts as, this is totally voluntary, you're going to have to opt in, you totally don't have to do it, becomes, wait a minute, if you want to get through the airport, you have to be scanned.
I want to dig deep into the privacy stuff, but first I actually want to understand the tech a little bit. What do we know about how this actually works?
Well, facial recognition technology has been around for a while, and it takes on different kinds of forms.
Yeah.
When you do it on your iPhone has all sorts of sensors. It has a camera, and it has a depth sensor, and it's got, on a secure part of the iPhone, a map of your face. And every time you look at it, it says, is this that person? Yes or no? And then it lets you in. It all stays on your phone. It's a little bit different with what they're doing at the airport with TSA. TSA has two different ways that they're going about this. The first way is what they call a one-to-one comparison. So they have a little computer at this kiosk that you go up to, and you put your ID into it, and it looks on the ID at the picture there, and it tries to see, okay, is the person standing in front of this kiosk the same person as on this ID? And the computer decides yes or no, shows it to a human before a final decision is made, and then you're allowed to walk on or you're asked more questions. So that's one way they're doing it. The other way that they increasingly want to do and are doing, particularly for international travel, is called a one-to-many system. So in that case, they're not comparing it to your physical ID. In that case, they have a database of photos of lots of people. Now, one of the challenges is there are different kinds of error rates, we assume, with those different kinds of technology. It's much harder to do one-to-many than it is to do one-to-one.
Where does that database come from? Like, how do they have that photo of me that's floating around in their database?
So today, it is an opt-in kind of process. So just like many Americans have opted into first getting a passport, when you get a passport, you give the government a photo. And then also there are programs like Global Entry and TSA PreCheck. And when you do that, you also give the government a picture. There are also, I think in the future, or maybe in some cases already, airlines that are going to ask for your picture. So they're asking you for your picture and then saying, do you want to be part of this? And if you do, we're going to use it and store it in a database to make this comparison. That's the way it works for now. The fear is, where does this go next? Do we eventually end up with national databases of the photos of every American or every person who's traveled through American borders. And then once we have that, do we just use that when people are boarding an airplane? Or do we use that when people are walking around on the street? Or do we use that when there's a protest? That's a really slippery slope.
One thing that's hard to know right now is how accurate the facial recognition process is beyond what the TSA says.
There was a study that happened a couple of years ago by the National Institutes of Science and Technology that showed that depending on the algorithm, depending on the system, there could be a significant error in facial recognition for people who have darker skin tones, African-American people, and also Asian people. That said, that was in a kind of laboratory setting. There are two different kinds of errors that it could have with different kinds of implications for our society, and we should talk about those. The first kind of error is a false negative. So you go up to the booth and you say, you present yourself and you say, I'm supposed to be on this plane today. And it says, oh no, it's not you. Huh. If that happens to you, that could lead you to having your travel delayed. You get an extra pat down, all kinds of stuff. You know, people are live in fear of what's going to happen to them if they get asked to step aside at the airport. The other thing that could happen, the other kind of error that could happen is a false positive. And that was the whole purpose of this in the first place, right? Where we're trying to ensure safety and security. And how often does that happen is another question.
And do we have any idea?
So I asked the TSA, and they said, it's working great. And I said, do you have the data? They said, no, we'll have to present that to Congress at some other time. So after I wrote my column in the Washington Post, several senators wrote to the TSA and said, hey, what are your actual error rates? And I have the letter that the TSA sent in response a couple of weeks ago. They said, specific results for accuracy, performance, and field assessment data are designated as sensitive security information, SSI. Therefore, TSA and SAT will be happy to provide you in a separate briefing. In other words, they said it's classified, we can't say out loud, which does not make me feel really confident that these are really high rates that they're proud of. Maybe it's just fine, but maybe it's just enough that they know they're letting in the wrong people sometimes.
When we come back, what happens if, say, the TSA loses your data?
What is the one most important thing our society needs?
That would be harsher punishment for parole violators, Stan. And world peace.
Okay, we get it. World peace might seem like a pipe dream. But what if I told you it's not? 2024 will see more than 50 elections around the world. And in some places, peace is actually on the ballot. One reason is because countries in Europe and Latin America have been experimenting with this thing called feminist foreign policy. Because right now, the way that we wage war and peace, it's kind of a boys' club. The new season of Things That Go Boom from Inkstick Media and PRX is coming March 18th. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket. So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
You mentioned accuracy on darker skin tones. We had Deb Raji on the show. She's one of the researchers who did kind of a landmark study on facial recognition showing that it is less accurate on darker skin tones and particularly on dark-skinned women. And one of the things this makes me think is like the TSA does not have a great record with making travelers of color feel great and confident. Do they understand that? And is that something that they have kind of thought about in trying to sell this program to the public?
In my conversations with the TSA officials running this, they seemed aware of the racial discrepancy that can be at play with the use of facial recognition and that there would be sensitivity about it. They tried their own mini study they told me about where they tried to sort of understand and have people with different racial and ethnic self-designations go through and see how the system responded to them. And I asked them, what did you learn from that? And they said, we learned it's really hard to categorize people, which is true. I mean, yeah. Yes, talk to any anthropologist. It really is. But that's not exactly the same thing that you were talking about. You know, the thing that they kept going back to, which I think is an important part of this conversation, is this is voluntary. You have the right to say no. And I said, okay, but you know, airports are places where people are really kind of tense. your rights have already been curtailed in a bunch of different ways. So do you really feel like you have the right? Do you even know you have the right to opt out? They said, absolutely. And I said, well, what if the agent in front of you doesn't really want to let you opt out? They said, you should ask to speak to the supervisor. I put all this in my column. And then I started hearing from Washington Post readers who said, I read your column. And I said, I wanted to opt out. I told them, please don't take my picture today. And they were told things such as, there's always one by the person the agent at the counter. And so, you know, there's all of these ways in which people get pushed back or get treated differently because they're trying to opt out of these systems. So again, do you really have a choice to not be part of it? And I know this is one of the things that the Algorithmic Justice League is now working on as a project. They are trying to do a more scientific version of my inbox, which is to collect the stories, particularly people of color, trans people, all sorts of people who these systems we know aren't great at necessarily identifying and what experience they have at the airport with it.
Well, you just brought up the thing that I was going to ask you about next, which is what if your gender identity does not match your government ID?
Another really good question. I haven't seen any statistics about how often they deal with that. I did ask, can the system handle changes in appearance, such as gaining weight? Or in fact, since I made my state ID and my passport, I have grown a beard. I grew a COVID beard. And I was like, would it recognize me? And they said, yes, that shouldn't be a problem. But, faces are complicated and different. And this technology is still essentially experimental, right? We're still working on it. We're still figuring it out. And yet that is not slowing us down from implementing it.
What happens to this data? Is it stored? Is it discarded? Where's it go?
So I'll tell you a little historical story first, and then we'll get to what's happening now. So I mentioned back in 2019, I investigated some of these programs with customs to use facial recognition for people leaving the country or entering the country. Shortly after I wrote that story, one of the concerns I raised in it was, once you have a database of people's faces, that could be stolen, right? This is the number one privacy concern out of all of this. Maybe you trust the government, but do you trust the government to keep it safe? And shortly after I published my column, guess what happened? They lost a database of people's faces crossing the Canadian border. They blamed it on a contractor who didn't secure a database, but Whoever during that period of time was crossing the Canadian border, their face is now in somebody's hands. And the thing about faces is they're really hard to replace. So once they're gone, once somebody has your face print, you're not going to be able to do much about it. So fast forward to today, what is the TSA doing with this data now? So in that one-to-one case that I mentioned, which is the majority of the ones today, right, where it's you're presenting your ID and it's checking it with that ID, TSA says most of the time it deletes that data almost immediately within that day, but not always. Sometimes it holds on to it for a while, and they hand it over to their science and research department in order to try to answer the questions from annoying people like me about how effective it is and how well it's working. And in those cases, they can hold on to it for, they said, a while, a couple of weeks. But, you know, again, we haven't gotten a lot of specifics about that.
I read one of your columns from 2019, and you talked about the motivation behind this as being sort of driven by business and immigration. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about who is driving this? Who wants these things to be in airports? Is it just the TSA to say, hey, this is easier for us? Or are there other kind of pressures?
Well, I think the number one pressure the government feels is that there was a law passed that said that they have to do this. And so they're sort of, they feel a little bit stuck. The airlines themselves are under constant pressure to reduce costs, and the biggest cost that they face is humans. And this could be one more thing that they could do. You don't even have to see a human being to get through the gate. You just smile into a camera.
Biometric screening at airports is literally in your face, but facial recognition is more subtle in other places and perhaps more widespread than you think. At the World Cup in Qatar, some 15,000 facial recognition cameras kept an eye on spectators.
It's this slow, subtle creep, right? It's actually a model for, you know, we talk so much about artificial intelligence right now, and it's a great example of how things that at first seem, we call them artificial intelligence, and they seem weird and we have to talk about them, and then they just kind of get incorporated into life and we don't call them artificial intelligence anymore. People don't even call their iPhone unlocking facial recognition or artificial intelligence. It's just open. And that's what's happening all around us with this technology. You know, again, being used to get into sporting arenas, devices. And then also, I think the next layer that's really going to come along is, you know, over the last 5 to 10 years, millions and millions and millions of Americans have been convinced to install surveillance cameras into their own homes, Ring doorbells, Google Home devices, and they are all collecting data, not only of the residents of those homes and people who come to the door, but also people who pass by on the street.
If you're listening to this and you say, I don't do anything wrong, I'm a law-abiding citizen, this seems easy to me, why should I care?
You should care about privacy because data is power. And if you want to maintain control over your life, you need to maintain control over your data. Because once somebody else has your data, they can do whatever they want to with it. They can use it in ways that you probably might not have ever imagined in the moment. They could lose it. It could end up in the hands of somebody else. Lots of things that you probably wouldn't want to do. And the only way to stop those outcomes that we can't quite see yet is to make sure that you're holding on to it in the first place.
Jeffrey Fowler, thank you so much for talking with me.
You bet.
Jeffrey Fowler is a tech columnist at The Washington Post. And that is it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell and Patrick Fort. Our show is edited by Mia Armstrong-Lopez. Alicia Montgomery is vice president of audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. And we're also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. And if you like what we are doing here, the best way to support this show is to join Slate Plus. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. You'll get all your Slate podcasts ad-free. All right, we'll be back next week with more episodes. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.